Welcome to the Legendarium Green Team. I'm your host, Kip Tan, and with me today are Befuddled Panda.
Hello.
Ashimon.
Hi, everybody.
And Dusty.
Ciao, boys.
Awesome. Today, we'll be discussing Consider Phlebas, the first book in Ian M. Banks' Culture series, published in 1987. This is our second Culture episode. You can check out episode 159 for our breakdown of Player of Games, which we consider a broader entry point. Okay, we're going to be starting with general impressions and ratings of this book, and I'm very interested to hear what people have to say. Panda, I'd love for you to go first.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Of course you would. You want me to give my star rating of this book?
I do.
Okay. I'm like between a 2.5 and 3. Mm. That's how I feel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Out of 5 or 10?
Out of 5. I'm not that cruel. General impressions. Oh my god, why did I read this book? I read it because you told me to, that's why. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into because it is so different from the Player of Games, which I really enjoyed, and I was expecting to also enjoy this. I knew very little about this going in. And I don't hate it. I see there are definitely parts that I did enjoy. But there were a lot of parts that I, one, did not really care about and honestly skimmed. Two, I had to put this book down because I was going to throw up.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then three, the characters just were not all that interesting to me, unfortunately. And I was expecting more of the minds to be more like active participants in this book. And I was disappointed. So those are my general thoughts.
Okay. Dusty, you look like you want to say something.
No, I was going to say the minds are active participants in this book. You just don't see it firsthand.
I mean, there's definitely one of them that's an active participant / target of capture.
Yes. But
damsel in distress.
But like they had very little page time, you know?
But some of the best page time.
I agree, but not enough.
Okay.
We
can agree with that too.
Yeah.
My ranking of culture books corresponds quite a bit with how many minds are in them and how much time they get.
That's really funny.
Ash.
My thoughts are pretty similar to Panda here. I finished this book because I had an obligation. I cannot claim to have really understood the nuances of many of the characters or the plot. I will not say that Ian M. Banks is a bad writer here. I will say that, like Asimov, here his characters are not good. He has really good ideas. There are some good characters, absolutely, for sure. They are not the ones that get any of the page time. There are like points in this book where I'm like, are we going to get some of this really interesting perspective? No, we're not. There are a lot of great ideas in this book. There is some excellent introspection and philosophy and discussion of themes. And all that great stuff is like 2% of the novel. And then everything else, my eyes are like glazing over. I did not enjoy the main character at all. And a lot of what he chooses to spend the page time on, my eyes were glazing real hard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's your number rating?
I want to give it a 2. I can bump it up to a 2.5 because, like I said, the ideas were great. You know, there's compelling stuff backing this, and even if this had been my introduction to the culture, I would still want to read more books. I would just hope that they are significantly different.
Okay. Now it's Dusty's turn for his actual thoughts on the book and his rating.
Well, my other thoughts are just me, her own thing. Yes.
Okay. Not just defending that there are minds in this book.
Yes. No, I actually really like this book. Yes, on my second read, I liked it a little bit less, but this was my introduction to the culture. I just read by publication order. And picked it up, read the intro about the mind escaping. I know, It's not really spoilery yet, but and I was like, that's so cool, what's happening? And so I still really liked it. Yes, I dislike about 99.99% of the characters in here. but I realized that in real life, there's a large percentage of people who I also dislike and don't think they're good characters. So I think it's very well captured real life.
Oh my god.
So I took that in stride and I enjoyed it, even for the weird parts that seemed unimportant. They kind of make more sense now, having read the whole culture series. So I can say I definitely enjoyed it. And my star rating is a bit higher, maybe 4.5, maybe even 5.
4.5? What?
5 stars.
I am pretty generous with my 5 stars. If you look at my Goodreads, if I give a book 3 stars, it's basically trash or something that I would put under a table to keep the table from rocking.
Your rating system is whack.
No, it's just optimistic.
So just subtract 2 stars from every rating. And you lose precision.
Okay.
If I give it 5 stars and I review it, even if the review is super short, it means that it's like 6 or 7 stars.
Okay.
That's okay. How mine works.
Interesting. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. I respect that.
I feel like I need to use the 1 and 2 stars or else they're just wasted space.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, this is probably the third or fourth time I'm reading this book. Not a ton new for me. I really wondered how much certain sections of it were necessary.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that the imagination and world building that he's put on display, and the large scale action pieces that he sets up, are really adding something to science fiction, and they deserve at a minimum 4 stars.
Okay.
We have balance.
That's where I stand on this book. And if I'm going to like credit this book for starting the culture, it goes up to 4.5 stars.
Okay.
Oh.
So where does this book fall in like your ranking of all the culture books?
Pretty low.
Yeah,
like,
pretty low.
Is it dead last or is there like even worse?
It's not dead last.
Okay.
That's a very personal scale. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was being a less personal person in devising that ranking, then I would put it dead last.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
You're not cold and robotic enough yet.
You know, I've been making improvements.
Oh, dear. Okay.
His heart grew 10 sizes when he read Consider Phlebas.
Hey, being cold and robotic is the future, so you're good.
Yeah, as we kind of learned from the culture, absolutely.
They don't have to be cold either.
Yeah, they can simulate warmth.
Are people ready to dive into a spoiler-filled discussion about this book?
Yeah,
why not?
So I am excited to talk about this book. Like, even though I did not enjoy the majority of it, I'm here to talk about it.
Awesome. Yes.
Rip it a new one.
This is definitely not a book where it's just garbage. And I don't think, as I said, I don't think it's garbage. There's a lot that's really interesting here.
See, for me, that's what warrants the 4 stars.
Yeah.
I feel like what warrants high star ratings for me is if the story is good. And I think we're all agreeing that the story is not good.
No, I think the story's good. I just think I hate everybody.
I see. Yeah, fair enough.
I think that there's some unnecessary interludes that could have been cut.
Yeah.
I feel like this book does a lot of things that I would consider somewhat necessary. It gets a lot of the boring criticisms of the culture out of the way so we don't have to deal with them later.
Yep.
That's one way to look at it.
And it presents the culture from an opposing viewpoint first, which is unusual. Yeah. And pretty cool in my mind.
Yeah.
Even though he's wrong.
The culture doesn't agree he's wrong necessarily. Just misguided.
No, but I do.
Okay.
Oh, man. Some of his postulations are so dumb. They're so dumb.
Yeah, they're stupid.
Oh, I really love when he starts talking about faith and biological determinism.
He's an idiot. Sorry.
No, he's just a little blind. Just a little blind. And I can understand why he's a little blind. This time I really tried to understand Horza's cultural prejudices a little bit more and extrapolate his political influences. But let's dive in.
Okay, let's do it.
Warning, spoilers for Consider Phlebas. an ancient book, which was actually even more ancient because it was rewritten from a 1984 work that he'd originally thought about, and then he rewrote it and published it.
Cool.
So, first up, this is the book that covers the Edirin War of the Culture. And we start with a saboteur, spy, infiltrator, Bora Horza Gorbachev, and his on-again, off-again antagonist, Perostek Belveda.
I am impressed you can pronounce these names.
He was totally practicing before the episode.
I haven't even said Zokzarl yet.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
Unaha Klasp?
Yeah, the one that I can pronounce is Unaha Klasp. Maybe not even awesome. That well.
Belveda.
Belveda.
Yep. I mean, they're fun names, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're future names.
Okay.
They're a bunch of letters.
So what does everyone think about Horoza's stated reasons for supporting the Edirin side of this war? The idea that he is on the side of biology, not machines.
I think he's both full of it, and there are so many people who are in his camp, right? And probably more so at the time this was published. The idea that there's something magical about meat as opposed to synthetics. I don't buy it, of course. It's kind of a hard position to defend philosophically. But there are a lot of people who intuitively think that way. So
I'll reframe it then as one of his sub-arguments, which is, isn't it insane to give up control of society to another group of people and exclude yourself from decision-making?
Uh-huh. Well, when you put it that way, it sounds just like he's angry that that they're not living in like a communist utopia or like an anarchist one. But he's on the side of the religious fascists. So,
Listen. Kind of a they blind listen to people. There.
They, oh my god, they're people themselves.
Yeah.
The religious fascists
have hearts.
Haven't they wiped out entire planets because the planet was like, nah, we're not going to get into your weird religion thing?
But they're reasonable people.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, I guess if you think of it that way, it makes a lot of sense because there are a lot of people who can be very one sort short-sighted. And so if you find somebody who's also very one short-sighted, whatever the word is I'm looking for, then they're easy to understand as opposed to open-minded and multicultural sometimes. And that's hard to understand.
Yeah.
Horza.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't care. I just didn't care. I was
anytime
like,
Horace is on the page, just.
Well, no, it's not that. It's
not trying to figure out the prominence of his motivations.
No, because at the end, I was like, "You're really dumb." Like.
Yeah, but minds think that about all of us.
Well,
but they're nice about it.
Except maybe Paul McGee started. They're like, "What is up with you?"
Which one?
The human that who's like being informed of the opinion and is giving her advice on what the culture should do.
Oh, I always forget about her. The hype, the anomaly.
One of the anomalies.
Mm-hmm.
I do like how they. How it's like they give like a tepid defense, like, well, humans can't compete with minds. This is an established fact. But there are a lot of humans. how many trillions of them? Like, you're going to get like a couple dozen that have something worth saying.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that, you know, there's this appendices about the Edirin culture war.
I love that as an ending.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. It's super dope.
I feel like this book could have been like 200 pages shorter and that get to that appendices faster, and then I would have enjoyed it more.
Okay. Yeah. Which parts would you cut?
Yeah, okay. I'm curious.
So what I would say is this book is fairly action-packed.
Agreed.
However, I skimmed a lot of the action because this guy went into so much detail trying to describe every movement, what each character was seeing and everything. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, I don't care. Just like, give me the highlights and I want to know the outcome. It was like, you know, you have tension building in these action scenes but I couldn't really get into the momentum of the action because there were so many things being described, each movement that was being described, and I was just like, that's way too much. So to me, a lot of the action scenes could have actually been slimmed down and been made, pardon the pun, more punchy. So
I totally agree. I think you could also safely cut quite a few action sequences, right? Like when they're on the planet. What, I don't remember what the planet
is. The orbital?
No, not the orbital. Well, okay, you could also cut a lot from the orbital. But when they're on the planet to find the mine.
Dryasons.
Char's
world.
Yeah, when they're on Char's world. I think you cut like a good 80% of that. Like them just like tromping through the train tunnels. Oh, are we going to get the train moving at?
You wouldn't have the breakdown of like Zoxarl and his slow escape from captivity.
Oh.
Yeah, I liked that stuff because you're like, hey, what's happening? And then suddenly he drops a train on them. So
Mind numbing. I could have done with like, so yeah, the injured one.
I totally agree with you that last bit drags.
Yeah. And you could also cut a lot where it's just like he's getting to know the pirates. They're gonna die almost immediately.
Literally, he spent paragraphs on each character.
Yep.
And then I was like, cool, I don't care.
He wanted you to feel bad when some idiot uses AG on a non-AG orbit.
Oh no.
That's like splat.
I was like, oh man, I hate these pirates. This is great.
I think you can safely cut like the assault on the monastery, most of their salvage mission on the orbital. A lot of the post-damage game stuff, I think you could make the damage section longer, actually, because that was a really interesting concept. I don't think they got enough page time.
Mm.
That part I was actually interested in, for sure. Yeah.
Right? That damage is, like, a really cool game. It could be, like, a Casino Royale kind of thing.
Yeah.
Horza, like, almost loses his mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Staring into an infinite reflection.
It was just, like Ash had said earlier, the choices that he made of what he spent words on, I just don't enjoy. Like, the things that I would like to know more about would be, like, I actually was more interested in, was it Belveda, like her as a character. You know, we got a little bit at the end where she was like, I do feel like I'm part of this team, even though she's a prisoner, you know. And I'm just like, what was her real like goal here? Because she seems like a fairly smart character person, but then she got into the situation. It's just like she's really
our first example of a culture special circumstances agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we have no idea what they're thinking.
Yep.
Yeah, very little ideas about what they do, what they can get up to, other than the fact that they're quite deadly and they sometimes carry guns in their teeth.
Yeah, which was really cool reveal. But also, okay, if I'm just gonna skip to the end, Horza, the fact that this guy took the enemy to the mind that he was trying to find and trying to prevent the culture from finding. I'm just like, why? I get it. Like, he doesn't want to leave her alone and blah, blah, blah. Yep. But there were totally other ways, you know?
He was having a crisis of conscience.
But also, he wasn't up against Belveda. He was up against thousands of years of machine practice manipulation. So how much of that was him actually thinking that stuff, and how much of it was something was implanted in him a long time ago and they managed to get their agent in there, even though he thought that they didn't?
I mean, if you're saying that, then how much of it was Fall Negistra?
Yeah.
Well, something that I didn't quite understand was there was this like flashback scene in Horza's past. Or maybe it was a dream. Like, I couldn't tell what exactly it was because it was portrayed like a dream, but I couldn't tell if it was like something that actually happened in his past where he like had some sort of encounter with not quite a maker, but somebody that was like training him or manipulating him or something. You guys know what I'm talking about? And that's where the ba-la-la came in.
Ba-la-la.
You know? I know what you're talking about.
Ba-la-la. Ba-la-la-la.
Like, he woke up, and then, I don't know if I can find the chapter, but it was, like, when they were in the tunnels, and, like, you know, he set up the perimeter alarm, and he fell asleep, and the Unaha clasp was, like, watching him
and saying bala 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 bala. Yeah. Okay.
And that was like part of his dream or flashback or something. But then, you know, later on when the drone was damaged, that's what it was saying. And I don't know if there was supposed to be a connection between the two.
Oh, I don't know. Could be.
Should have marked it. Sorry. I don't know.
You mean sort of like a hypnosis thing?
Maybe. And that, you know, if that is the case, right, then to Kip's point, like, or to Dusty's point, like, maybe somewhere in his past, he was actually, like, implanted, you know, certain characteristics, certain, like, thoughts, motivations that would then have him lead Velveeta to the mind, maybe. But that might be too big brain.
So are you talking about the bit, like, where he's dying and losing consciousness? Because that's where Unaha Klosp was mostly saying balala.
No, so there's a part where they went into the tunnels, right? And then everybody was, like, really tired. And so he was like, okay, let's call it for the night. And then he was sleeping. But there was a, like, flashback type or dream sequence.
Oh, okay. With Zorlandra?
Maybe. Yes. Yes. Yeah, chapter 11. It's like, yes. Wake up now. Come on, wake up, right?
Okay. Okay, yes.
Am I making something up?
Yeah, no, it's pretty clear that he was mentally influenced by the adherents.
Okay.
That is, yes.
They put him through some sort of, like, academy training process, and he became one of their agents.
Okay, I think I may have, like, misremembered things in this section. So just ignore everything I said for the past 5 minutes.
Okay.
I would like to just return very briefly to things that should have been cut and mention that no one has discussed cutting the eaters of the dead
okay.
The eaters section.
Oh, don't cut them. Don't cut them.
So here's why I didn't say that, okay?
Okay. Because of Hurin?
No, not because of Hurin.
Okay.
I acknowledge that, you know, that could have been, like, just another element of world building, you know? And I mean, in Player of Games, there were also, like, descriptions and, you know, societies that performed atrocities. And it got pretty graphic, right? So, sure. Totally get it.
They were more central.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that this was, I mean, I personally could do without it, but if the author wanted to put a message out there, you know, he wanted to fly his banner about certain things and use this as a vehicle to do so, then fine, whatever. I did not enjoy that part, and yes, that's the part that almost made me throw up. I don't even want to think about it.
It's less about cutting it for me, and the thing that really confused me is this is a culture orbital, and sure, you could say that the culture has abandoned it, so nobody's watching it, but why are they allowing this to occur?
Listen, X-culture orbital.
Oh, it's not actually currently in orbital. It wasn't a current orbital?
It's like in some little, like, midway state between official culture and non-official culture. It's
because it was so confusing to me that I know orbitals because I've read the series, so I'm like, why are these people here? The culture would not be cool with this.
The,
like,
culture is fine with a lot of things as long as it's self-determined.
This is
an example of extreme religious tolerance.
But Song was like, okay, he's self-determined or whatever, he, it, thing, blob. But the other people, like, were they really self-determined, or is this one of those, like, Stockholm syndrome type things? So
well, the ship was there, the module was there for anyone who wanted to leave.
They could have left at any time. Except for the one that got eaten.
Yeah, except for the one that got eaten.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to go there because in the first place, is the real
that
answer.
That one tried to leave. The person that they ate was the one who tried to leave. So there wasn't really choice. I mean, I guess if you say the collective...
The culture was no longer enforcing anything on that island.
But they had a shuttle there. They could have. It means that they knew they were there. They had awareness.
They had a shuttle that they'd told to turn off its external monitors because it might find the things on the island disturbing.
That is true.
Because, I mean, there's that, and then I'm also, like, the damage game. Like, if I was the culture, I wouldn't let that go either.
A module was too dumb for the culture to consider it, like, a current module anyways.
Yep. Oh, I feel bad for it, though.
Yeah, I feel very bad for that module.
Yeah.
It's probably the, like, murder that I hate Horza for the most.
Yeah.
So upset about that.
He's so, like, sociopathic about it, too, right?
He felt for that one. He fell for that one. Yeah.
No, I don't think he did.
I think he did.
I think for him it was like, it's a machine. Who cares?
He felt just a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. Not a lot.
Not a lot. No, not a lot.
It's a machine. He doesn't care.
I think maybe that is his character arc, where, you know, that's earlier on in the storyline, and we see him brutally murder this machine. But then later on, the way that he treats the drone, Unaha Clasp, a bit better. Not great. He treats him like a servant. But a little bit better. You know, maybe it's like, okay, he's coming around a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
Unaha Clasp is significantly smarter.
Yes.
And more interesting. I might have had just made a realization.
Okay.
So going back to that whole like flashback dream part, you know how Horza was like, oh, her name is Kira Chell. And and the other guy is like, oh, Gira Shell or whatever. And then the Zora Lundra was like, oh, just a moment. And then, you know, he was like doing something on a machine or something, and then pushes Horza back, and then, you know, all of a sudden he wakes up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this has any substance, but could it be that Kira Chell, like him and her were never actually lovers, and everything that he thinks about her was like implanted in his brain by the Edirans to like tame him? Yeah. Or something. And then this whole time, like on Char's world?
Yep.
He talks about Mr.
Oh, yeah. What's his name?
It starts with A. Appreciator or
adjudicator?
I'm doing a search for Mr.
Okay.
Mr. Adequate.
Yeah. And like, we never see Mr. Adequate.
No.
There's no sign.
I mean, we don't even know if he has a body.
Right. Okay. So I'm just wondering if, like, you know, Mr. Adequate was, like, his mind's way of rationalizing, like, what
so
he went
no.
through.
So,
no. No. Okay.
Mr. Adequate is the Drazon in charge of Char's world.
Okay.
Yeah. That's different.
He's the person who maintains the defenses and watches over the planet.
Got it. Okay.
Really do anything.
And the reason that they call him Mr. Adequate is the Drazon are an elder civilization, and they don't really interact much with lower civilizations.
Okay.
Wait, the Drazon, though, I thought that they sublimed and they just left stuff behind.
Mostly.
Ah, okay.
They're like beings of like pure energy and resonance with the universe and stuff, right?
They remind me of Protoss. Every time I hear Drazon and pure energy, I'm just like, power overwhelming.
Yep. That is the idea. They have power overwhelming. Probably overwhelming enough to stop the Edirian culture war if that's what they wanted to do. But they don't.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So I think that's why I was so confused. I was like, okay, this Drazon is not doing his job. It's just like, hey, come on in, everybody. Check out what's happening. And I wondered if maybe it's because the Drazon are curious about this culture, Edirian War, and they're like, ooh, we can get like a first-hand glance if they go to Char's world. And like, so they bring it in as like, let's make a documentary. You know, I just don't know why they let it go through.
Okay, so you want my theory?
Yeah,
okay, sure.
The Drazon allowed all of this to happen because they wanted to basically be a memorial for this war which killed out this whole planet.
God.
And they want to make the point of that old war impressed upon the young mind. And they want it to grow up to be more pacifistic than it might otherwise be.
Interesting.
Okay. Right. That I actually buy that theory.
I could buy that too.
I was thinking it would be like another addition to their exhibit.
That's what I thought too.
No, because the epilogue makes it clear that like return journeys find no evidence of the stuff that happened.
Mm.
Yeah.
The command trains are repaired and restored. There's basically no record of Bora Horza Gopachil's last visit to this planet.
Yeah, except this ball of
in the command
remnants.
System.
Yeah.
Yes. The bodies get moved, the trains get repaired.
That's actually a pretty solid theory.
I think that's a sound theory.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I couldn't think of anything else.
Okay.
Huh. All right.
Going back to Horza's motivations, so we have now discovered, all of us, that he was mentally altered by the Edirans, but also it's made very clear that the, I think it's a rogue planet or a rogue planetoid that the Changers live on, and it's like kind of drifting through space, and currently it's in the Edirans sphere and has been for a while. And I think that that is one of the primary motivations for why Horza does the things that he does. And all of his stuff afterwards is just kind of explanations after the fact.
Like,
the most important thing for him is the survival of his species.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that if he makes himself useful to the Edirans, that the Edirans will classify the Changers as useful and they will be protected.
I see. I mean,
don't give me sympathy for Horza.
Except ultimately he failed. Right, because they all died.
Yes, so. Ultimately he did fail. They remained xenophobic to the end and died out.
Dang, that's right, I forget. They all died.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try reasoning with the religious fascists.
But at the same time, like, they died, but like the culture's like so like super mega awesome at doing all of that genetic changing stuff that I'm sure that they could just like reincarnate them like Jurassic Park style. So it doesn't really, it's not that important.
The culture would also realize that those would not be the same Changers.
Fine. Or maybe they live on in simulation.
Like, the culture citizens right now are like, they're basically Changers as is, right? Their control over their own bodies is
quite large, but it doesn't extend to the point of being able to replicate fingerprints on demand, as far as I'm aware.
That was
pretty cool.
You don't know what they put on some special circumstances agents, right?
I'm sure some special circumstances agents are different.
Yeah.
Well, like, how much do you think the culture took from the Changers, like, observed them and was like, well, these are cool abilities, let's replicate that?
They're around before the Changers, though, so I don't think that, if anything, it would have been the other way around. Like, the thing, the Changers humanoid species, like, they could have been altered and engineered from a previous culture humanoid species.
The Changers are also strictly biological, and the culture enhances its special circumstances agents with technological things as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is like, they learned from observations of how the Changers work and then replicated it.
I think the culture has no need for that kind of copying.
Mm.
They can build bodies from first principles. They don't need to look to nature for imperfect systems.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, the culture spent a long time redesigning their own reproductive systems and brains.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else.
Well, that was a cool thing about the Edirans, where it's like, you know, they basically, quote unquote, grew out of sex. It wasn't important to them as warriors anymore.
They have a large portion of their life that's spent in post-sexual maturity.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting.
Yeah, it's a cool little bit of a life cycle there. And also, a very long life cycle for those Edirans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is because from their world, they kind of had to be immortal, like everything did, because the world was like so hostile.
Yep.
Mm.
Actual death worlders.
Yeah.
Which makes sense for the way that they developed.
They're kind of like Zerg.
Kind of.
Yeah. I like their resistance to radiation.
Yeah, that was cool. Makes spaceship building easier.
It does, right? And it makes nuclear power something you can get much earlier on in the tech chain.
But then you don't have any good movies like Chernobyl.
I'm sure they have equivalents. I'm sure they have much worse.
That's probably true.
Do we ever see the Edirans actually enjoying anything?
No.
I mean,
who are the real mindless drones in this in this book? Is it who are the real mindless drones controlled by forces outside of their control?
Zoralandra and Zarl seem to get some like fun kicks in like controlling other people and beings.
But also who is the one that had no legs who like started up the train? Like at one point he's like kind of happy just being on a train, and I'm like, you guys missed your calling. You all should have just been conductors of trains, not warriors.
Yeah, trains are the way to happiness. I'll agree with that.
Oh dear.
I mean, these were some cool trains.
Yeah,
Mars was really cool world building.
The command system was a cool idea.
Yeah.
The idea of just following pretty much endlessly, that was terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm.
Was this book published before or after the Civil War ended?
What?
I'm seeing some parallels. some inspirations, as you will.
Well, I'm just going to repeat what I said at the top of the episode here. Consider Phlebas was published in 1987.
Wait, which Civil War are you talking about?
Yeah, I'd love to know.
Sorry, Cold War. Cold War.
I'm sure about.
Oh, the Cold War.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, the Civil War. Yeah. I mean, the Cold War was really a civil war for humanity. When you think about it.
I mean, all wars are civil wars for humanity.
It was during the Cold War.
I wouldn't put it that much because it's a pretty hot war. You know, you've got orbitals being destroyed and...
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about
the command system was a clear mirror for the Cold War.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And deterrence and...
Yep. Mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
Which ended up being what happened.
It wasn't assured, right?
What do you mean?
That was the idea behind the command system. There would be a chance, like, they made it very statistically unlikely that you would kill the command structure of the,
So then it breaks the mat.
Yeah.
Oh, because of the different trains.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But it turns out like you could still kill all the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Structure survived, people died.
Ain't that how it goes?
It's cool.
How many planets of the dead do you all think are in the culture universe?
A lot.
A lot.
I don't know.
What percentage of planets, and there's no basis for this, there's no...
I think it's probably only like 1%.
In any stance here.
I would imagine that the vast majority of intelligent species die out in some kind of great filter situation, and the interesting ones get kept around by the Triazon.
Well, that's dark. But, okay.
I mean, if that's the case, then it's got to be a really huge number of planets, because in the culture universe, like, the number of... It's, like, very crowded neighborhood, right? Like, every time they expand a little bit, they're like, hey, here are these interesting triangle people that have to have three people to breed and play a crazy game. Like, everywhere. There's just so much in the... And even that small civilization was an empire. What? That was another galaxy?
Yeah.
Oh, it was?
That was in a Magellanic Cloud, yeah.
Oh, you're totally right. Man, but it's just super crowded. Like, that's the way I see it, is like very crowded. So then if you're saying the Great Filter kills out most species, then there's gotta be a lot of planets of the dead.
Yeah, I mean, if you're expanding, you have to have life sustaining planets you can expand to. And you could conquer the native species.
Do you have to have life-sustaining planets, or can you just make orbitals?
Okay, if you're the culture, then you don't have to.
Orbitals.
But there's a lot of civilizations other than the culture who are less advanced, and the culture kind of, like, you know, condescends to.
But also, I think the culture makes their orbitals, because I think about this a lot now, of they're kind of against, like, terraforming, because life-sustaining planet does not mean Earth-like. It could like, Titan, so...
They also view planets as an inefficient allocation of resources.
That's true, too. That's pretty funny.
this not resource limited culture. It's just an aesthetic preference to them.
They're like, oh, a planet. The average culture citizen looks at a planet and is like, ooh, that's wasteful.
That's not very elegant.
Like, where do all their resources come from?
Look at all that internal volume that's just not being used.
And there's so much hydrogen in the universe.
There's so many rocks. There's so many rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, even we have an asteroid belt, like just a bunch of rocks hanging in it. So then that's times a million.
Doesn't at some point, like, the amount of material that they are reallocating, isn't that going to change the balance of the universe?
The universe is really big.
The universe is really big. And if they really cared about it, they could take the energy out of the energy grid.
Oh my
to
God.
Make the matter.
That's true, actually.
But if we do want to talk about the finite nature of matter in the universe, why don't we talk about that if we cover the book Matter?
Okay, sounds good.
Hell yeah. You sold the book to me.
I get surface detail and matter confused all the time.
Matter talks about the primacy of natural matter.
Okay, I still don't remember.
Well, it's okay. But we'll get there. Eventually.
I mean, will we?
Will we not?
You got a long time scale to work on, right?
No, we got a while.
Surface detail.
This book certainly didn't endear the culture to you, Panda, or Ash.
Okay, so here's the thing. Like, I did not enjoy this book as much as I expected to or hoped to, okay? But But the culture itself, right? The world, the universe, the minds, like all of that is very interesting to me. So I am totally willing.
The thing that I said makes this book Bedrock 4 stars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But like there was so much of this the pages that I didn't like. So that's not 4-star material to me.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's clear when reading this that he's one of the smarter authors around. So his stuff is worth reading just for that. But I also happen to know that he actually can write well when he chooses to.
Yeah.
So
I applaud you for not having me read this book first and had me read Player of Games first, because I really did like Player of Games. And it is that enjoyment and knowledge, knowing that there are books in this series that I really like, that is making it okay for me to say, okay, even though I don't like this one, I will continue.
We actually have a listener question that kind of touches on this from Jingles. How well does this book work as a first? Do you see Banks leaning more into exposition here than in other books to establish the culture?
For me?
Yeah.
I would not read this as the first book. Okay. Like, no, thank you. How much exposition because it is the first to establish the culture? Like, I would say yes. There is more exposition, but at the same time, the way that it was done to me wasn't that effective. Like, if this were the first and only culture book that I read, I would be like, that was kind of cool at parts, but also really boring at a lot of parts. I don't think I want to continue, at least not immediately. But I think Player of Games actually made a pretty good intro because it had a lot of different elements. Like, it did tell me what the culture was. It gave me an in-depth view of like, what was it like living in the culture, and then interactions with those outside of the culture and the differences. So I think that did much better job as an intro.
Okay.
I totally get that. I think the one thing that I would say that's having this having been my first culture book, you get different things out of it than you would after you've read more about the culture. So I feel like the first time I read it, when Horza would say stuff about like the culture and arguing about that machines running everything is a bad thing and that the culture bit off more than they could chew with the war, I got more out of it the first time I read because I didn't know much about the culture yet. So I was like, all right, so this guy's argument, see what he said. And then after I read a lot more about the culture, every time he said that stuff, I was just like, you're stupid. You don't understand. And the adherents have no idea what giant they woke up, and one day they're not even going to relapse because the culture is just going to assimilate them. So,
wasn't it ridiculous when they had that space battle between the adherents and the culture? I think it was just a GCU, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was hiding inside the surface of a star.
Yes, it was so cool.
And they went over the battle record for Adiran versus culture combats. And they were like, no battleship has won against a GCU.
None.
Yeah.
We need like 10-1 numbers.
Yeah. Basically, all their victories are just them genociding civilian populations.
Yeah.
Like, causing billions of deaths. And,
yes.
You know, I see that this is the intro that he wrote, and I see a lot of introductory elements to this. I agree with Panda, the introduction is not great in a lot of areas.
It's definitely not up front.
Yeah. If this was my first culture book, I would have missed a lot of what was interesting about the culture. That, to be fair, is alluded to and sometimes spoken about briefly in conversations Horza has, like with Balveda at the start. And shout out to her just refusing to talk anymore because arguing with an idiot is a waste of time. That was excellent. And then he goes away thinking he's won the argument. He's like, oh yeah, she's coming around to my way of thinking. I'm so smart. Like, the amount of fury that I feel at Horace from like almost every moment of the book really clouds over any interesting ideas that like that come here.
And Horza refuses to believe that the culture could win the war.
Yeah, which is absolutely insane to me. Absolutely insane.
You know, though, reading it, I was thinking, like, Belveda was, you know, a prisoner, and she couldn't really do much, and, you know, up until the very end, when she shot her tooth gun, whatever. But she had to be saved by Horza. Like, she was gonna die. I think that did, at least to me, show like, okay, the culture, it was more of a balanced war than a like overwhelming, you know, victory for the culture. It wasn't until the end when it was the appendices and there was like the overview and talking about the aftermath and like everything that happened afterwards and the scale of the war. Then it was made really clear to me like, okay, the culture, well, first of all, why the culture even engaged in this war in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just the way that the culture was patient and had a whole bunch of history and experience to draw from to be able to win, even though the adherents, yeah, it was just like at that point, then it was kind of crazy to think that adherents still thought they had a chance. But leading up to it, there were parts where I was like, okay, maybe the culture really can't win. So
that's why we went from the opposite side of the culture, right? Because we could see like maybe the culture might not win.
Yeah.
Which is why it might make sense to have it be a first book, or I don't know, actually maybe not, because then you know there's nine after, so obviously the culture won. But it's interesting. It's not a perfect historical example, but I always think of the Adherian culture war in the idea of World War II of Japan mm-hmm. like expanding and being like, all right, so, but we need to expand. We need to hit the United States because they won't let us expand any further. And then they hit the U.S. And for a little bit, the U.S. is like, oh, no, you destroyed all our battleships. This sucked. And then 2 years later, it's like, you guys knew you weren't going to win this war, right? Like, there was no way. Like, once the U.S. kicked up into its war frenzy and started building everything and set everything out, it was just obvious.
Also, Japan thought that it would take months for the U.S. to enter the war, even once provoked. Even if they decided to. They thought they had at least like 3 or 4 months. But the U.S. had deployed troops within a matter of like a week.
Yeah.
And the Japanese didn't think that the Americans had the stomach for the war.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the bigger parallels, because like even the people in the culture are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Do we?
Orza thinks that cultures, people do not have the stomach. Yeah. That the most annoying twink thought on that boat. Not that the culture didn't have the stomach, but I want to join contact anyways.
Oh yeah, that guy.
The people are too soft and lazy.
Yeah.
Right.
I think by far the most interesting critique of the culture here comes from Fal Negistra herself when she's doing that drug thing and she's examining the other side's, the strongest possible case for the other side, and then the drug wears off, she's like, yeah, no, we're fine.
Yeah.
Are we morally decadent? No. Our culture is pretty great.
We're pretty good. We don't do random genocides for religious reasons.
There were people from the culture who did defect because they're like, we should never be violent. We should be peaceful. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is some.
They didn't defect. They just exiled themselves.
The Adherian War is a major branching point for the culture.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It sees the birth of the peace faction, which believes a completely pacifistic ideology. I'm not sure if it's the origin of the Zetetic Elench, which are like even weirder. They believe that the way to contact alien species is to become like them.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
But there's a big splintering of the culture into various minor factions. Mm. There's still like the main culture, but the Adherian War saw the creation of like subcultures.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Something I thought was interesting is how the book emphasized how fuzzy the distinction between culture and non-culture, not culture is. Like there's not a hard line where you just, now you're part of the culture. It's kind of like it's like a gradient. And honestly kind of confuses me why anybody's not part of the culture. Because they're so culturally appealing. Like, why are these pirates flying around in this garbage spaceship?
That's one of the main reasons for the pirates, in my opinion, is to, like, show a life that could be so much better if the people just joined the culture, but for one ill-adapted reason or another, they don't want to.
What was the girl's name?
Yelsin.
Yeah, Yelsin. So she was one of the more interesting characters, and I just felt bad for her, like, the entire time. You know, she's just having a terrible time. Like, she, first of all, she thinks that Horza is someone she should date, which...
Bad idea. Bad instinct.
Then he kills and imitates her captain, and she's like, "Yeah, I guess I'll keep following him and have his kid."
She really,
I mean, she was following Craiglin.
Yeah, well, and then we learn that she was originally from the Kelter, or her mom was, yeah, or why something. Did she used to leave? And it's like, oh man, this girl just has made bad decision after bad decision in her life.
Yep.
I've seen this movie.
I did not expect her to die. I wasn't expecting Horza to die either. I did think there was going to be some sort of happy ending. So there was that.
It was happy. Horza died.
Yeah. God, okay. What a relief.
Belveda was sad about it, though. Okay.
She should be.
I was so confused.
It's the job of human culture agents to be sad about things.
But why did the drone name himself Horza?
Not a drone, a mind.
I mean, why did the mind decide, was it that mind instinct to be quirky, or did they really care about Horza?
I think the mind really cares about Horza. But in a way that only minds can care about things.
Fine, I will take that.
Horza was a character only a mind could love.
Oh my god.
Now that's an obituary. That's too
I guess I'm still a little confused, like, as to why the mind cared so much about him.
Minds work in mysterious ways.
Oh my goodness.
Horza wanted changer culture to be continued.
Think of the way they explain the minds in the tunnels of a filing cabinet filled with ideas. And then you have 50 buildings filled with those ideas. And actually, it's a whole planet of filing cabinet buildings filled with these ideas. And then a whole galaxy. So I basically read that part and I said, all right, so I'm not supposed to understand the minds? Got it.
But you are supposed to understand that one of those minds could fit Horza inside of itself with no problem.
Yeah, the extra spatial nature of the minds was interesting.
I really do like that aspect, that the minds like exist partially in hyperspace or primarily in hyperspace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And kind of raises the question, like, what's actually the distinction between the minds and like the Draazon, or like the beings of almost pure energy? Like, I guess they have like a mechanical tether, but do they need it?
They do need it. And remember that example of all of those boxes was an example of the mind functioning at full capacity, an example of the mind's current capacity.
Yeah, because it shut most of itself down.
Yeah, it had.
Why did it do that?
It didn't have the power.
Oh.
It didn't have a ship supplying it with enough power to run a full mind.
I thought it was worried that Mr. Adequate would like get mad, be like, yo, no hyperspace tapping here, bro.
No, it had just enough to jump itself into a planet, and then it was effectively in distress.
So the beginning of this book, right, where the whole explanation of these ships and like one of them got destroyed and the mine escaped and all that. That was so cool.
I love those sequences.
It was so misleading.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
You had to wait till the end of the book.
Yeah, it was a really, really strong start and a really, really strong post end. And there were some really cool interludes in the middle.
So you have really, really nice bread on the outsides, and then somebody went out and bought the generic version of Oscar Mayer ham, and that's all that's in the middle.
You know what? I was going to say bologna. Yeah.
And it made the bread soggy.
And it was going bad.
Okay.
Because it has to have that smell, because this book has a smell in the middle.
Can I make one more complaint?
Sure. You can make many more.
Okay.
You make two more. That's it.
Okay. So in the tunnel, when Horza sees the Adirin and whatever his name is, the prisoner dude.
Zarl?
Zarl. And was like...
Zarl.
That, whatever. That guy.
There's an introductory XO.
Oh, God.
Zarl.
And, you know, he's like thinking about killing him, and it was like, no, this would be too easy and too good of a death for you. So I'm going to take you prisoner, and I'm going to take you to be tried.
Such a mistake. Such a lie to himself as well.
I'm like, dude, how many prisoners can you really manage here? Like, no. Where's your survival instinct?
And the prisoner escapes at one point and tries to kill all of them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the entire book is just like, I was just like reading, and it's like, how is this guy not dead yet? He, at every juncture in his entire life, it seems, he's made exactly the worst decision possible. The worst, most like homicidal, maniacal, awful, morally dubious thing. And he just keeps doubling down, and somehow it works for him.
One wonders if maybe there's some mental imprinting on him that prevents him from killing an Adiran.
Maybe. It
could be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But it's just like, oh, he just keeps getting away with it.
Yeah.
And people are letting him get away with it, too. Like,
and then they die.
Yeah, how was the pirate crew okay with this job? It was terrible from the start. I mean, I guess they were stupid enough to follow Craig.
So. They're stupid enough to be pirates in this world in the first place.
That's fact, yes.
All of them are so broken.
They're like sheep, but sheep that are too stupid to follow like the obviously pleasurable and good shepherd that's just waiting there for them.
That's normally how sheep go, isn't it?
They want the excitement. They want the thrill of almost dying regularly until they finally do die.
Yeah.
There was that one part where it was like, oh yeah, things were getting too quiet anyway.
Yep. Easy in, easy out.
Oh my god.
No, Horza is like, he's like a really terrible, stupid version of, what's his name in Malazan? Korab?
I did think that. Yeah, who gets really lucky.
Yeah, kind of. He's a religious fanatic.
Yep.
Let me just insert the moment when he was watching the destruction of the orbital and pontificating, like, this is why the culture is going to lose, because they can only bring destruction to the universe.
Oh my god.
I would have put the book down. I would have ripped it in half. There are very few passages, like, things I put myself through that have made me as viscerally angry that I'm doing it as like that section.
You really just did not like Horza's lies to himself, did you?
They were so stupid.
They're
more than any other time. I just want to reach through the pages and slap him, and just have like a very long argument that wouldn't end well for either of us.
You know, I did have a hard time a little bit with the orbital Vavatek or whatever.
Vavatch.
Thank you.
Definitely wasn't my Wi-Fi network for a couple of years. No, definitely not.
Was it a good Wi-Fi network? And I guess like this was the proxy for, you know, the Cold War metaphor.
Civil War.
Civil War. Because, like, it's, oh, if you won't leave this orbital alone, then nobody can have it. You know, I'm going to destroy it. But at least the culture had the sense to try and evacuate everybody before they destroyed it.
They offered free evacuations to everybody, too.
Yeah. People just didn't choose.
But no, they're degenerates that can only sow destruction.
At the same time, though,
Horza was amazed that they would even attempt that. Because orbitals are massive.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like the fact that they destroyed, you know, this orbital that was home to so many people. Like, people had to leave their homes.
Yep. And some of them didn't.
I'm sure that the entirety of the population in that orbital could have relocated to any number of culture worlds that would have been, like, infinitely better for no cost.
Yeah.
But they could have. That was made very clear. Yes, they could have.
Yeah.
But still, you know, like, they had to leave the lives that they had built. Or
the horrible lives that they had built in this horrible
place.
We don't
know that for everyone.
But, like, come on. One plate looks a lot like another.
Oh.
Well, actually, plates could look exactly like another. They could rebuild Vivatch way into their own space.
That's true.
I think only a few were, like, all water, like that one was. Yeah, they were all living on cruise ships.
And
all
if
water?
You have,
I thought it was just a lot of water.
No, there were little bits of land at the edge.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what the beach that the eaters were on. But even if you are traumatized by this, you're feeling sad or whatever. Guess what? The cultures you covered there too. They could just make that go away.
Let me brainwash your pain away.
Like it's the Balveda refuses the PTSD treatments, and she's like, "No, I'm going to live with my PTSD." But you know, like when it's a choice, then. Dude.
Maybe they just haven't lived in our time.
I mean, it's their culture. They could make an exact copy of Vavatch.
Yeah, they could simulate it even, like, exactly as you would known about it. And you could just live in that simulation forever. And they could make you forget that there was a simulation.
Sure, but we also live in a time where we read this stuff and we go, man, that would be nice. Whereas in Player of Games, they deliberately got the flu to see what it would be like.
That's so, a use of weapons, right?
Oh, is that use of weapons? I thought it was Player of Games.
Use of weapons.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's use of weapons. All right.
Yep, because that's SMA.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, that was hilarious subplot, though.
Yep, and they can just be stored until the Nuva Vatch is built.
Yeah.
I guess.
You don't have to even experience any time of waiting.
Yeah.
I would be totally okay with leaving my home to go live in the culture.
Sure. 100%.
They could destroy my apartment. I would be totally fine with that. I have no sympathy for these refugees.
You know, they take us all, they can destroy Earth.
Oh, dear.
Who would choose to live on a megaship as opposed to other culture habitats?
I mean, I guess it's sort of like you're always traveling.
And who would love to see that megaship crash done in, like, a TV adaptation or a movie adaptation?
Definitely.
Because in my mind, that's one of the most, like, cinematic parts of the culture series.
Yeah.
That was a very Titanic moment without the deaths of Titanic.
And compelling characters.
It was kind of weird. And also too much description about that boat. Just...
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not
dragged
on. I don't know. I just thought of it as a huge triangle.
A huge triangle?
I don't know why.
Okay.
The ship is just a huge triangle.
It is. I mean, the culture does what they want. It was basically a Star Destroyer.
You just thought of it as a floating Star Destroyer.
Yeah, that's basically what I thought of it. So when I saw the smash, I was just like, all right, so I can see it. I could see what happened to my Lego UCS Star Destroyer if I push it into a wall really hard. So
okay,
Legos don't buckle right.
That one does because the plates. Well, there's Technic on the inside, so not completely, but the plates themselves are all just like one flat line. So it kind of like, ugh. It's just it's wild.
Okay,
go online and look up YouTube videos of Lego.
I still don't think it would buckle right
into walls. It wouldn't buckle that one, you're right, because it's like. But
ABS still. Does not buckle super well, just snaps.
We were having a short conversation in the Discord group chat, and we cut it off early because it was...
Episode talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was in reference to the Eaters being a metaphor for human fanaticism and refusal for humans to escape these horrible systems they found themselves in for a lot of reasons, like sunk cost fallacy and whatever. I said... I think it's an apt metaphor, but also that it would not convince anybody who would need to hear the message in the first place. Does anybody here disagree?
No.
So it's just like Banks like pontificating on how flawed we are as a species without like much point to it, it seemed.
I do not think that Banks is particularly interested in having conversations with people with closed minds.
I guess that's fair considering the conversation Horace has with Belveda at the start.
Yep.
Yeah. I he probably had too many futile arguments. And honestly, I get that.
I do too.
Sometimes a mind will just remain closed and it's kind of impossible.
Yeah. And about topics where people are willing to go through the extent of what the Eaters were doing, then I would say that the chance of changing their minds is pretty low.
Yeah. And I guess everyone in this book is doing that to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, the whole crew of the Clear Air Turbulence should have interventions run on them to be like, why are you doing this lifestyle? Stop. It's going to kill you in like the next couple weeks.
I was also kind of disappointed with Unaha Klosp. And it was like, oh, I kind of feel good when Master calls me a good slave now.
Oh, I thought that was sarcastic.
Yeah.
Sarcastic.
Yeah? You think so? It was in this internal monologue. Sarcastic,
and I have not ruled out Unaha Klosp being a special circumstances drone.
Yeah.
We get its internal monologue, right? And it is thinking,
but I thought that was sarcasm.
Maybe. Maybe he's... Yeah, I suppose.
Because everything else he says is all sassy and quippy and like, sure, yeah. I'll go and check out this reactor car.
The very sassy drone.
Yeah, the fact that it does anything at all for Horzit boggles my mind, you know?
Well, he tried to explain that to Belveda, right? Like,
I think he gets, like, actual satisfaction just from doing, like, electrical engineering work.
Yeah. Oh,
no, I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to do electrical engineering work, there's like so much that you can do that isn't at the behest of this racist moron that constantly insults you.
Yeah. But if Balveda is going along with it, then a special circumstances drone might go along with it.
Oh, yep. I suppose. Feels very tinfoil hatty though.
I put on my tinfoil hats for these culture episodes.
That's fair. I guess if you wanna, if it makes the book better for you, Kip, I'm all for it.
I mean, you've got what's his name from Player of Games birdwatching half of the thing, right?
Right.
Like, so yeah. They just do their thing.
Bird watching. Yeah. No, I maintain that the limiting factor there has more to do with Gerga than the book shows, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You can't just have a mind and not have it do anything.
Yeah, they like to be useful.
You just let the dumb humans think that they're the important ones the entire time because, you know, it's good for their mental health.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The only time that a mind isn't running circles around someone is when it's extremely devolved, like this one that got trapped in Char's world. Mm-hmm. It's not even running in hyperspace anymore. It's in like a dumb little mechanical brain. It's like closer to human baseline.
Even if it had like one drone to work with, like a proper drone to work with, it still would have absolutely wiped the floor with everybody. Right?
Yeah. If it had a missile drone.
There you go. Or like a knife drone even, you know? Everything's fine.
See, this is why. But like, this is why I always talk about, you know how everybody, like AI is becoming bigger and obviously knew we'd get here and everybody always goes to like Skynet and like thinks that AI is going to like destroy us and like make its own thing. But I think that that's for an AI, like especially these minds, they're so far out there that that's the boring option. Like anybody can stomp on your enemies that have no ability to fight you. Why not co-opt everything and then make a game out of it and then make it into some utopia against their will, even if it is their will, but they don't know it. That's way more fun.
It all depends on what their reward function is.
That's true.
They did say that some Adirans joined the culture in the epilogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't we? Maybe those are Hamamdans I'm thinking of.
The culture never technically vanquished their planet, but what they did do was they removed the restrictions on the AI that was running their home planet, self-updated itself, and then essentially declared independence and became a culture mind in all but name.
Yes.
Absolutely hilarious.
Nicely done.
One wonders why they didn't do that initially.
I love that as a war-ending move.
Why didn't they do it at the start?
Effectors have range.
Ah.
And then because the Adirin space is actually fairly large.
Yes, Adirin space is quite large. And the Hamamdans were their allies. And the Hamamdans had culture equivalent technology.
Culture superior, according to the epilogue. I don't know if I
trust. A superior in some areas, but not others.
Why didn't the Hamamdans help more? If they really had equivalent or superior technology in certain areas, then if they were going to back somebody, why not really push?
They wanted status quo.
And they also continued their trade with the culture, even though they were allied with the Adirans.
The Hamamdans were the United States and Vietnam. Mm. We don't really care about winning anything. We just want to keep this centered the same.
Mm.
They were anti-war. They didn't want like either side really to go for the war, but they thought the Adirans had the slightly better argument.
Okay.
And then they're like, actually, nah.
Actually, after a couple decades of this, no, we're done.
That's a terrible argument. What are you talking about? Yeah.
They're like, okay, you guys are actually pretty annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you want to have the Adirans as your allies in war? They don't seem to really value that.
No.
No.
Are you saying religious fascists don't make good allies?
I don't know.
At least these ones don't.
Not good neighbors either.
Three-legged beings all rise together.
Ooh. When are we going to cover the tripod series?
Oh, hey, that's a good one.
What is it?
The tripod series. It's an old science fiction series about aliens who invade Earth, but they walk over the surface in these large machines with three legs.
Huh. Okay. Mm.
It's really good.
I think I've seen that. It's called War of the Worlds.
it kind of is a War of the Worlds, but like a what if after the aliens succeeded occurred and then human races enslaved.
The aliens succeed. They make like dome cities where they live. And every year they select new faithful to, because they put these mind controlling caps on all humans.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Which like predispose you to loving the aliens and making you incapable of resisting them.
I see.
And then every year, new faithful are selected to serve the aliens inside their domed cities. And we follow a couple of resistance members who have given themselves f***ups and tried to infiltrate the cities and see what they can do.
Interesting. All right, maybe. But speaking of next books, what are we going to read next?
Yeah, Panda, you said you need a break, right?
I didn't enjoy this enough to approach Use of Weapons next, because when I did try to read Use of Weapons, I wasn't Dusty. Quite into it.
Sorry, my bad.
No, it's fine.
No, I'm blaming Dusty.
It's fine. I want something that we have collective confidence that I will enjoy.
I don't have confidence in you enjoying anything that I recommend.
Oh,
not that I think you're hard to please. I just have my metrics for what you enjoy is completely off.
I mean, I get that too, because okay. I mean that's why I picked that book first. Because for me, in the world of sci-fi, that one to me was like, this is an entry point. Sure. Everything's an entry point except for Void Star or this other book that I just read. So.
I also just need something like shorter.
Use of Weapons is an excellent book, but I think we will skip over it and we will do The State of the Art instead.
Okay.
Did we do State of the Art, or she keeps talking about mines, and so what about Excision?
Excession would be next if we go over State of the Art.
Deal.
Excession would be next, and you know how much I want to do Excession, so I can't be impartial about this topic.
I mean, more mines, I'm down.
But I love Excession so much.
How
Excession
much?
Is all mines, basically.
It's a third mines.
Hell yeah.
It's a lot.
At least. Yeah. It's a third mines, but then also like it's one third mines, one third pregnant woman moping in a tower.
Yep.
And one third
it's like other stuff.
Contact agent who used to date the woman who was moping in the tower.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're really selling this book to me at this moment.
There's a lot of mind stuff. It's really, really good. There's a lot of mind stuff in it.
Yeah, that's all you need to say, I think.
I believe you, but I think I...
State of the art, they go to Earth.
Yeah, let's go with the shorter one for now, because I still need to finish Malazan, and Crippled God is next.
Crippled God is heavy, big, and I'm so excited to see you guys finish this.
Crippled God's great!
That's the Dreams book 4 is next.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that one's good, too.
The last two really blur together in my mind. Can't separate them in my head.
Oh, I've got a big separation point, so...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with State of the Art.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yep.
And we will get back to Use of Weapons. It's not like... We're
yeah,
not
and then Excession after that.
Yeah, I would
just
cover...
continue with the series and then go back to Use of Weapons.
I would do a solo episode on Use of Weapons if no one else was up for it.
Wow.
Sure, okay. Not for that episode.
It so would no, take me 3 hours.
Just you alone would be 3 hours?
You know what? You can host that episode. Buddy, host that episode.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I can talk about Use of Weapons for a very long time.
Oh, please. Gosh. Okay. All right. That definitely needs to happen after I finish Malazan, because
just the chapter list is beautiful.
You've had enough of me talking for
no,
hours
no,
about
no,
stuff.
No, 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 I feel like I need to give it my full attention. Like, I shouldn't just skim, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say Use of Weapons, another unlikable protagonist.
Yep.
Great.
But an
interesting unlikable protagonist.
Better. Much better.
Interesting, not stupid.
Okay.
Does it make me awful that I kind of like him?
No.
No.
Okay.
I'm okay not liking the character as long as the book is engaging, you know?
So.
Well, it's engaging, all right.
There you go.
Love that book.
Right.
Okay. Well, this has been the Legendarium Green Team and our second culture episode. Woo! It's been a blast having all of you here. Thank you, Craig, for loaning us this corner of your media empire. Thank you, Horizon Brave, for getting us all started. Our intro and outro music is Galactic Damages by Jingle Punks. And we'll see you next time with The State of the Art.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.